The invitation to preach may have come from Kevin, but the welcome comes from all of you. So thank you for having us. Psalm 125 was the text that grabbed my attention this week, and I'd like to begin by reading it again. And so I invite you into the same two practices you've already practiced together related to that reading. I'll ask you to stand and respond at the end, the word of the Lord, thanks be to God. So please stand with me if you are able. And hear again our passage for the day, Psalm 125. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but stands fast forever. As the hills stand about Jerusalem, so does the Lord stand round about the people from this time forth forevermore. The scepter of the wicked shall not hold sway over the land allotted to the just, so that the just shall not put their hands to evil. Show your goodness, O Lord, to those who are good and to those who are true of heart. As for those who turn aside to crooked ways, lead them away with the evildoers. But peace be upon Israel. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Go ahead and be seated. You know, preaching a poem or a song is a strange thing. I know y'all know a little something about poetry around here, having produced at least one book of poems yourselves. Tyler was so kind to send me a copy of that collection a few years ago, and I was delighted and honored to read them. So I know that you know poetry. But if you'll humor me, I'd like to read you a poem about poems, written by Billy Collins, who served as the Poet Laureate of the United States from 2001 to 2003. It is called Introduction to Poetry. I ask them to take a poem and hold it up to the light, like a color slide, or press an ear against its hive. I say, drop a mouse into the poem and watch him probe his way out. Or walk inside the poem's room and feel the walls for a light switch. I want them to water ski across the surface of a poem, waving at the author's name on the shore. But all they want to do is tie the poem to a chair with a rope and torture a confession out of it. They begin beating it with a hose to find out what it really means. So again, preaching a poem is a strange thing. But it is the path I've committed us to, so we're doing our best with Psalm 125, not to beat it with a hose to find out what it means, but to wander around in it, hold it up to the light, press our ear to it. There is a subtitle of sorts attached to Psalm 125 and to the 10 or so psalms on either side of it, a song of ascents. These songs are a mini collection of psalms inside the larger collection or book of psalms, and the word ascent refers to the journey to Jerusalem made by pilgrims among the people of Israel at the annual times of festival. You can easily imagine these travelers on the road, straining their eyes for the first sight of the city. Perhaps, after many days of travel, barely beginning to catch a glimpse of the mountains, one pilgrim begins to sing, "Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but stands fast forever." Another pilgrim catches wind of the song and joins in. As the hills stand about Jerusalem, so does the Lord stand round about the people from this time forth, forevermore. In a literal sense, Jerusalem and Mount Zion were historic locations of God's presence among the people of Israel, and those locations were geographically and theologically tied to God's protection and blessing of them. Their actual pilgrimage to those locations is both a reminder and an embodiment of their trust that the Lord will continue to be present with them and for them, even in whatever new set of arrangements now has them living dispersed from that city and those mountains. Even without that history, though, we can easily understand, especially in this region of the country, how mountains would come to be a metaphor for God's stability and strength, permanence and presence, faithfulness and fortitude. Mountains are majestic, awe-inspiring, impenetrable, ageless. I don't have to tell you more about all that. I grew up visiting the mountains of Vermont on the other side of the country every summer. And I remember being in a family cabin surrounded by mountains and feeling a sense not only of awe, but also of coziness, like I was being held or enveloped. I can hear some of that in this psalm, too. The hills around Jerusalem are like arms wrapped around God's people. If you've seen the movie Moana, you might be picturing the way that the mother island, Te Fiti, emerges to pick up Moana and then lays back down on her side and looks like a mountain again. As the mountains cradle Jerusalem, so does the Lord cradle the people, like a mother bear or a hen hovering over her chicks. And in a surprising twist, it is not only the Lord who is like a mountain, but also those who trust in the Lord. As a result of God's presence with them, the people cannot be moved, but stand fast forever. As they participate in the life of God, they take on some of the attributes of God and become like a mountain, grounded, centered, and secure. This imagery is beautiful and evocative, able to carry and to communicate the weight of its theological claim that the Lord stands fast forever around the Lord's people, is present with them, protecting them, overshadowing them with peace, and enabling them to stand firm. I wonder, though, if this theological claim or this confession of faith might be a little bit tentative or aspirational. Maybe it is as much a prayer as it is an assertion. I don't think it arises out of nowhere as sort of a theological FYI, just an update to emphasize a thing we believe. Rather, we typically say these kinds of things precisely in moments when we are not sure if we really believe them. We repeat the breath prayer, "Be still and know that I am God," precisely when we are drawn to frenzied attempts to cling to control. We bring out Julian of Norwich's quotation, "All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well," precisely when it is clear that all is not well. We sing, "Great is thy faithfulness," at the times when we feel most abandoned. We return to passages like, "Nothing can separate us from the love of God, neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation." In the moments when the love of God feels most at risk. And we confess, as the hills stand about Jerusalem, so does the Lord stand around the people when we feel most vulnerable to external forces, things pressing in on us that are happening against our will and out of our control. I cannot imagine this poem arising from a person or a community in the midst of comfort and certainty. Nor can I imagine it being helpful if this motto is thrown at someone in pain by someone outside of that pain. God has a plan, it'll all work out, the Lord gives the hardest battles to the strongest soldiers, or whatever. Instead, I think this song emerges right in the midst of pain as a confession of faith, maybe, but one that is more aspirational than actual. As the hills stand about Jerusalem, so does the Lord stand round about the people, right? Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved but stands forever, right? You can even start to hear that need for assurance more directly in the plea toward the middle of the psalm, "Show us your goodness, O Lord." In fact, that book of poetry that you all wrote, if I'm remembering correctly, was born out of a poetry group that began during the season of Lent, which is a season of the Christian year or liturgical calendar that asks us to pay attention to our pain, our vulnerability, and our suffering. Sometimes prose simply will not do. So what sort of suffering might be prompting this psalm? What is the crisis that seems to be pressing in on the people of Israel here? Historical reconstruction is all but impossible with the Psalms, so I can't locate it in relationship to a specific incident, but what the poem seems to reveal is that evil appears to be winning the day. Injustice appears to be the law of the land. And it is becoming difficult to trust in the Lord and to seek the good in such circumstances. The scepter of the wicked shall not hold sway over the land allotted to the just, so that the just shall not put their hands to evil. Right? Relatable. Show your goodness, O Lord, to those who are good and to those who are true of heart. As for those who turn aside to crooked ways, lead them away with the evildoers. But peace be upon Israel. Same girl, same. Haven't you wondered sometimes how it can even be possible to participate in the justice of God in a world where injustice appears to be the law of the land? Is there any set of steps that could make real systemic change on behalf of our neighbors, or is it all just band-aids? Doesn't it seem easier sometimes to just stop trying so hard to seek and do good? To give up because it seems like your choices don't really make any difference? Or to give in and play by evil's rules instead, because evil notwithstanding, playing dirty does seem to be effective? Isn't it tempting to join the psalmist in one of the more troubling parts of this psalm, wishing pain and punishment upon those who throw their lot in with evil and injustice? A good friend of mine, Mallory, says that this sort of vengeful anger is a little bit like peeing your pants. It feels good for a minute, and then it's just gross. This one troubling aspect of the psalm, notwithstanding, we share the psalmist's concern that the pressure to give in or give up is for real. There is so much in our lives, in our communities, in our country, and in our world that is tenuous, chaotic, heartbreaking. As the kids are saying these days, we feel shook, shaken and unsettled, rattled and unraveled. Our task in these times of anxiety is not to exert greater measures of control, but to practice greater measures of trust in the living God, the creating God, who is already and always engaged in the work of overcoming cosmic chaos, who laid the foundations of the earth so that it and we cannot be shaken. In times such as these, our only hope is not in our own moral fortitude, but in the presence and protection of the Lord in and among and around and overshadowing us. A presence that cannot be moved, but stands fast forever. A love from which nothing can separate us. I want to believe that. I sing it, and I pray it, and I preach it, because I hope that it continues to be true. How lucky you all are to be here, surrounded by mountains, as a visual reminder, maybe even a tangible one if you've ever tried to hike or climb any of those peaks, that God is not going anywhere, any more than those mountains are. How blessed we all are to be pilgrims on this journey together, so that when one of us is uncertain or unsure, we can be carried along by the chorus around us. That those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but stands fast forever. And maybe, just maybe, we can quietly join in as the hills stand about Jerusalem, so does the Lord stand round about the people from this time forth, forevermore.